welcome to the Onyx Pathcast. This is Matthew Dawkins, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dixie Cochran.
Hello.
But not Eddie Webb, who is somewhere flying across the Atlantic right now.
Yeah, because you all left me.
We did.
You didn't leave me. You stayed in your home country. But everybody else left me. It's very sad.
Someone needed to keep America together, Dixie.
Is that what I did? I mean, did it work?
No, well, we ended up getting your president.
That's what I'm saying. And it did a great job.
Yeah, he must have followed Onyx Path out. He's a fan, I understand. No, let's not cast that aspersion. I'm sure we have listeners that are a big fan of Donald Trump. See, this is what happens when Eddie Webb isn't with us.
We immediately get political.
Yeah.
Matthew and I are incapable of being apolitical unless we have the calming presence of Eddie Webb.
Burn down the Republic.
Eddie is notoriously not political. I mean, have you met Eddie? No, not political at all.
So, yes, you weren't at the UK Games Expo. I'm not saying that with emphasis to rub it in. But
thank God you weren't there.
Yeah. Now, what would we have done? But there were several of us there. So of Onyx Pathers, we had Richard Thomas, we had Matt McElroy, we had Eddie Webb and myself. Mm-hmm. We also had a small selection of freelance writers, including John Burke, Christopher Allen, Clara Herbel, and Steffi Devan.
All but one of whom you've heard on the podcast already.
That's very true, yeah. So if you're interested in who these people are, it won't be too much effort for you to find those interviews on Podbean and listen back, or whichever good podcasting platform you listen to us on. But don't despair, because we have interviewed Clara at the UK Games Expo, and that episode will be coming up in the next few weeks. This episode is not that, however.
What is this episode? I have no idea what we're recording right now.
No.
None? Well, there's no episode. We're just going to do an intro and then 45 minutes of silent reflection on why it was the bad idea to leave me at home.
Oh, we all commiserated your absence. This episode is a collection of live thoughts and reflections on UK Games Expo. At the start, it was just Eddie and myself. On day one of the expo, we were sat around the table in our Onyx Path booth talking about what our anticipations were and ambitions were for the expo. And then we did another one on day two and another one on day three. And occasionally you have other freelancers dropping in to say hi and what they're up to that day. We will talk a little about the Contagion Chronicles of Darkness tournament that took place at the UK Games Expo, what customers were interested in at our booth, and generally our experiences there. You're going to have a bit of background noise, because while often we started recording before the doors opened, we could do that because we were exhibitors, then the doors open and suddenly you hear a rush, a stampede of gamers going by. But hopefully that will all add to the atmosphere.
Ambiance. The ambiance of a gaming convention.
No, that's a questionable ambiance.
That's what I'm saying. No, I love gaming conventions. I will listen to it when it is available, and I will feel like I was there.
And now we will go to that footage, and immediately after, we will, of course, have an outro where Dixie will pretend to have listened to the entire thing.
Matthew, roll the tape.
And it's day one at UK Game Expo. I'm here with my co-host Matthew.
Hello.
It has been a trial already.
Yes. One could say it's been like pulling teeth.
That's my joke. You stole it.
Yes. It was so good, I had to get it in there before you did. Why is that our joke of the convention?
That is because one of our freelancers, Clara Hilbo, and I'm sure I pronounced that right, she had emergency dental surgery while we were here.
Yeah, that was an experience. We went to a lovely dentist on Baker Street in London before we came up to Birmingham. Went to see the home of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes,
the fictional home of fictional Sherlock Holmes. Without Eddie, we took a photo of him.
Yes, just to rub it in.
And then we went to the dentist, who was a very kind man and administered a very kind root canal.
For 700 quid.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't cheap. So the donation for Clara's dental surgery starts.
Right.
But that isn't the only trial we've had to endure.
No, no, no. Then as I got here, my luggage did not come with me from Amsterdam. So we spent most of the day trying to figure out if my luggage was going to come, if it had been found, and when I was going to get it back. So we were wondering if I had to buy clothes, if I had to, you know, get like toothpaste or toothbrush. But luckily, near the end of the day, it was found and delivered to my room. So thankfully, all was well. But it was a very nerve-wracking day.
And that wasn't the only trial, of course, because Matt also lost his luggage
on route
after having planes rerouted, having to jump on other planes because co-pilots had vomited all over the control panels of his planes.
Sending it to a nosedive.
Yeah, someone ate the fish, clearly. But but all in all, we all got here. We're all in mostly one piece.
Yeah.
And we are looking forward to gaming and meeting customers and potential customers and gamers and other such gaming types.
Absolutely, yeah. And so at the show here, we are doing something differently than we have done in past shows. In fact, that we don't have any product at the booth to sell. We are actually partnering with our friends at Leisure Games. They're actually handling all the sales of our stuff. So we're here with, we just have cards to hand out to people. We have demo samples of Princess Gambit and Fetch Quest, which I am now gesturing towards because that makes great audio production.
Excellent. You know, it's a tradition now that we have to do something visual in our audio-only podcast.
But yeah, really, we're here kind of just answer questions, run some games. All of us are running at least two games. A couple of us are running three games here at the show.
Yeah.
And you're running a tournament?
Yeah, so there's a Chronicles of Darkness tournament, which may sound a bit strange to the traditional role players among you, but on Saturday afternoon, a whole bunch of storytellers, among whom we have Clara, we have Chris Allen, we have John Burke, we have Steffi Devan, we have Chris Handley. They're each running a different Chronicles of Darkness game. I believe on show are Vampire the Requiem, Changing the Lost, Promethean the Created, Werewolf the Forsaken, and Geist the Sinner to second edition. They're all second edition games. And at the end of those sessions, which are roughly coordinated, the players have to nominate the player whom they found the most entertaining. That player wins a prize, which we have prizes, that's right.
Yes.
And not only that, they go through to the final run by me, which is a Contagion Chronicles session.
Ooh.
So they come through to that with the character they were playing in the previous session. So we will end up with a Promethean, a Sin Eater, a Werewolf, a Changeling, and a Vampire in a game of Contagion Chronicles set in Antarctica.
Nice.
Because I wanted to pick the most alien setting in Contagion Chronicle, and Antarctica works the best for
Certainly,
that.
Certainly, absolutely.
And the winner of that one, and we will all do a vote for that too, will win an even bigger prize, hopefully to be awarded by Mr. Richard Thomas himself, who is here with us. And if for whatever reason he has become waylaid, I'll do the duties. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Chaosium have been doing this for a few years now at Expo with Call of Cthulhu across different eras, and it felt like a very good idea given Chronicles of Darkness lends itself quite well to crossover, especially with Contagion Chronicle on Backerkit right now. It felt like a good way to get a lot of people playing Chronicles of Darkness games, remind them that they are there, and of course tie them into the fact that you can purchase them at the Expo at Leisure Games. All in all, I think it's going to go well.
Absolutely. For myself, tonight, or this afternoon, I should say, I am running a Dystopia Rising game. I've only had a couple of people sign up for it, so hopefully we get more to show up at the table. But it's a chance to kind of just start showing other audiences what Dystopia Rising is going to be like, get people excited about it as we're getting ready to get it into layout and get it out the door. And then Saturday, I am be running a Monarchies of Mao game. But what I haven't told the players yet is it is going to be one of the adventures from the Pirates of Quagmire book.
Ooh.
So it gives a chance, kind of a sneak preview right before the backers get a chance to actually see that adventure go online.
Is it the one I wrote?
I actually briefly debated doing that one, but actually I ended up using the one that Danielle wrote, which is set in Waterdog Port, because it makes more sense how you can get cats there.
Yeah.
Rather than just, now you have a boat for reasons go.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I'm not offended much.
You should be.
Yeah, I am. But Pirates of Pugmire is, of course, still on Kickstarter. We're going to be telling everyone about that.
We have literally hundreds of cards of people to encourage them to go to the Kickstarter and buy it. So.
Yep. And, one of the adventures I wrote for that book, I had a lot of fun. I think you fight a giant barnacle-like creature, a giant jellyfish-esque creature.
You do.
I remember in Red Lines you said, well, we've already got a jellyfish in the bestiary in this book, so either just use those stats or come up with a different creature. And I thought, well, I don't want to reference a monster elsewhere in this book. Let's just come up with something else maritime and scary. And as it happens, I happen to know a lot about...
Yeah, a little bit about maritime monsters.
Aquatic monsters. So we ended up with some kind of proto-squid mollusk that attacks your ship. And yeah, that's how it's going to go. So hopefully I'll get to run that at some point. Other than, oh, well, I did run it for playtesters when I was writing.
Oh, okay. Smugmire,
and they all enjoyed it.
That's good.
So yeah. And we have just been joined by a co-host who's probably going to have to lean quite far over the table. We've just been joined by Clara.
The reason for the said dental appointment we talked about earlier.
Yeah, quite dramatic.
And how are you enjoying your first time at the UK Games?
I'm enjoying myself. There's a lot of people. It's bigger than Denmark, that's for sure.
The entire expo is bigger than Denmark.
Yeah, the entire expo. Actually. Yeah.
And we've just been joined by another freelancer. We're going to have every freelancer.
Just lean in here.
And you've got to lean into the microphone a little. It's the one and only Mr.
John Burke.
John's not.
Said in a rather deflated way. John.
Just like, yeah, whatever.
It's John. Even I'm disappointed.
Have you ever been to a convention of this size, John?
I don't think so.
No.
Maybe one of the MCM ones in London was close, but in terms of pure games, this is the biggest, I would say.
Wow!
Yeah.
Nice!
And what games are you running, Clara and John? Clara?
I'm running two V5 games. I just acquired a book, so I'll be good to go. And I'll be running a Vampire Requiem for the
Cardinals of Darkness
tournament.
And John?
For the tournament, I'll be running Promethean the Created. Expertly, and they came from beneath the sea today and tomorrow morning.
Lovely.
Nice.
All right, any thoughts on the convention thus far that you want to share before we cut off this part of our UK Games Expo marathon podcast?
Basically, what I want to say is that we're hoping that throughout the weekend we're going to grab a bunch of people and have sit down to them for like a few minutes to talk about your show so far, how your games went. So you'll be hearing hopefully a lot more of these little clips going through and more of all of our lovely voices as we get through and hear the exhaustion slowly creeping into our voice throughout the week.
Exhaustion and resentment.
So with that, we'll head back to wherever we're going next.
Yeah.
It is day two of the UK Games Expo.
Yes.
And how was your first day, Matthew?
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. I hope you're listening to this, by the way.
High quality content.
If that was unclear for you, it was no more clear for us.
5 minutes, basically, what I got.
This is an announcement. So, yeah, yesterday...
The walls will be open in 5 minutes.
We've just been intruded upon by a wild Richard Thomas.
Anyway, so how was your day yesterday, Matthew?
So, yeah, day one was great fun for me. I was working the booth for the most part and running some Prince's Gambit. As mentioned earlier, we had Leisure Games selling our product, and we were reliably informed that they were selling out of a lot of it, so they actually had to drive back down to London last night to pick up more.
Yeah,
so that's always good to hear. There's always a lot of excitement regarding Pugmire, I found, at our conventions, the ones that we attend, I should say. It's obviously something visually striking about the game.
Mm-hmm.
When they go past our banners, they go, ooh, what's that? So hopefully that bodes well for Pirates of Pugmire. But everyone has really been friendly here.
Mm-hmm.
We've not had anyone come up to us and say, you ruined X game.
Right.
Or, who are Onyx Path? I thought Vampire was out of print, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like, why are you making these games? Somebody other company owns that.
Yeah, yeah. In all, it's just been very friendly. I wouldn't say relaxed, because it's the biggest games convention in the UK, but definitely a very friendly convention. What about you, Eddie?
Honestly, very similar. We spent a lot of time at the booth just chatting with people. One of the nice things about the booth structure is they're not selling anything, so it does give us more chance to kind of interact with fans, chat with business partners. So it's been really, really enjoyable to just spend time and, you know, talk about things like showing people how the Prince's Gambit works, showing people how Fetch Quest works, where you're at the table. Also, I ran my first game. I ran Dystopia Rising last night.
Yep.
The three lovely Irish people sit down, and we all play, me and also Matt McElroy.
It should be noted, we're not in Ireland.
No, so it's just all happened to all be Irish people playing my game, except for Matt McElroy, who has Irish heritage, so I guess it works out.
From an American standpoint, right. He's as good as full-blooded Irish.
A whole complicated issue about American and Irish relationships, but... that was four players, and they had a great time. None of them really knew much about the Dystopia Rising as a background, but they get really excited about the potential of the world. They got a nice blend of fighting zombies and some bittersweet emotional resonance. You got to invade a hospital full of rampaging raiders. And also, at one point, I actually kit-bashed a little electronic device, so I got to use the crafting rules, which that's something you get to do usually in convention games.
Yeah.
So I had to talk through, like, here's how you use scrap to make objects. And they're really into that. I mean, they just really, they applauded at the end, which, I guess, is that a regional thing about applauding at the end of a game?
No, I think you must have run a very good game. Okay. Yeah, we don't often applaud the GM over here, unless, I guess, they've done a very good job.
Okay, then.
So, yeah, well done you. I can only hope for the same reaction when I do Contagion Chronicle later today.
Yeah, you were organizing that earlier today.
Yep. So we've obviously, as I mentioned before, we've got five different GMs, five different storytellers, I should say, running Geist, Changeling, Promethean, Werewolf, and Vampire for Chronicles of Darkness. And one player from each of those groups is going to go through to the Contagion Chronicle game in the evening. There will be prizes, both for the Chronicles of Darkness games and for the Contagion Chronicle game. And yeah, we're hoping to take some photos. We'll put them up on the blog, so do check out theonyxpath.com.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's also been good fun to, I guess, hang out, chat with some of the freelancers we don't usually get to mix with. I guess, you know, because we're over in Europe. We've obviously been here with John Burke, Chris Allen, Steffi Devan, and Clara Herbel. Mm-hmm. And it's lovely to be able to chat with the people working on our games who oftentimes have completely different perspectives on not just the games, but also the business and the industry. It's lovely to get that those mixed views. So these conventions are very useful, not just from a customer facing experience, but as an opportunity for people who work on these games to meet up, have dinner, talk.
I think it's important. It's obviously not always viable, but when you can take advantage of it, it's useful, because since so much of our work is done through email or text messages, 1 second, it's now open.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you don't need the rest of that.
It's suddenly going to get a lot louder.
Okay. So people are going to come in.
2019 is open.
I got the open part. I got nothing else.
Yeah.
Story of my life. But anyway, because so much of our communication now is through emails or text messages, it's really helpful to put a voice to the words. So, like, for example, let's use John Burke's example. Is like... I had the advantage of talking with him because I played with him in your Pugmire game back when we did a Kickstarter. We did a podcast interview with him. I heard that. So I knew his voice before I started chatting with him. But if you hadn't talked to him before, he comes across so dry that I could see why some people would rub him the wrong way. But I got to know him and say, oh, that's just John. His sense of humor. And I get that now. And so I'm much more comfortable talking with him and even pushing back and, you know, joking with him.
Repartee.
Right. Mm. And so, a couple times, the cab ride over, I was joking with him. It's like, it's just because you're terrible. And he gets that joke, you know? Whereas someone casually coming in on social media going, what, you're terrible, John? Like, that's a very different kind of...
Yeah.
their tenor. So having that rapport, that ability to kind of go, I see where they're coming from because I've broken bread with them. We've had breakfast together, whatever, really does help.
Yeah. Well, Rich is with us. I'm sure he can't contribute much before the ravenous horde, pour in. Is there anything you want to add from day one of the convention?
No.
Well, thank you very much. I just got out of my chair, shifted quietly by so that Rich could sidle in and make his contribution to the Pathcast, knowing that we've got to fill up an hour, approximately.
And to clear, Rich leaned in to make sure that you heard the laughter of him mocking us. So yeah. This is the environment. This is our work environment.
Yeah. Except usually we only have to do this online.
Mockery and degradation. That's what we're about.
Yeah, it's the only way you can grow as a human being.
We're the dodgeball of the gaming industry.
But I mean, other things that are happening kind of in... I think we should talk a little bit about the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff at the convention. I mean, a lot of times our fans come to these shows, they just see us at the booth, or they'll see us at a game or whatnot. And we make oblique references to things like, you know, we have lots of business meetings here. But I mean, for example, we've had meetings with some upcoming business partners that we can't announce yet, but also, like, you know, our friends at Modiphius we're going to have some chats with. Some of our friends at White Wolf are going to be here. And those kind of, again, similarly helpful to have a talk with our business partners face-to-face, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the one, we went out to dinner with Johnny Hodgson.
Oh, I don't know if we can talk about
that. With Handworks Games, and they're the ones, his company is handling the Creature Collection.
Right.
Getting all the art, because John is
fantastic.
A renowned art director, great artist himself, and knows so many wonderful artists. So we have been releasing little snippets of the pages showing what the book's going to look like. It looks absolutely beautiful,
yep.
Great monster art. And so just getting in there and starting to firm up exactly when the Kickstarter is going to start, which we should be able to announce pretty soon. We just
right.
want to make sure it's working for when he needs to do it and yep. when we need to do it. And that's what a lot of the face-to-face is.
Right, but also, I mean, because John is a business partner, I mean, even though we love Johnny, like as a person, it's different from working with him. And so being able to have dinner with him and talk things out, it builds a different kind of relationship. So that way, when things get stressed out, when Kickstarter's ready to go on and emails flying back and forth, there's that rapport, like I talk about, you know, not just freelancers, but the same kind of elements of that, okay, we know where Johnny's coming from, so we know what's being said here, what the intent is here, so it's not as stressful as it could be if it's just, what's going on? Why is everything on fire? Oh, my God.
Yeah, and with him doing, still in the first year of his new company, his point of view on how things are going industry-wide is kind of is interesting for us
mm-hmm.
to get that kind of fresher take on how he sees it. He's very experienced. He's been doing this for a long time, but now that you're doing your own company, you make different decisions and you deal with different people.
Right.
And that's what we've been doing for years.
Not that you have any experience in that at all.
Well, yeah. We share our experiences, he shares his experience.
So an art director of an established RPG company who goes to form his own company, I mean, it seems like there's a common
It seems like madness to me. There's no way it can work. What do artists know
He's
about
exactly
running a business?
He's exactly 10 years younger than I am.
Oh, wow. So he's, like, exactly following your career trajectory at this point.
I sure as heck hope no.
But if he knows what's good for him, he'll stop right now or again.
Don't do it, John.
Love you too much.
I will say this. Away from the business side, we obviously get a lot of fans coming up to the booth at any convention that we attend. And I mentioned that no one has come up and said, you ruined this game. And quite the contrary, I think. It's very easy for people who create this kind of media or any media to get a bit blasé about the fact that fans enjoy the work, they really gain something from playing these games, they might engage with the material in a strong way, and you just think, oh yeah, and you're another fan, great. But it's all felt very genuine here. The fans are very earnest. Without being, I guess, what would the without being stalkerish, without being fanatical.
And you may not see this as much, Matthew, because you are here. But there was many people came up yesterday just to say thank you for coming to our convention.
Yes.
Yeah.
We love your work, but we haven't seen you here in our country. And I thought that was really nice. It was both welcoming and.
Yeah.
And to be appreciative of the fact that we decided to come here because we wanted to see what it was like.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement because it's like this Chronicles of Darkness tournament. Because we've been on primarily on DriveThruRPG as our main method of sales, which is very successful for us, it acts as a nice refresher, almost a palate cleanser, when people can come to a booth and see all these books out, even if it's just for demo purposes, as it is at our booth.
Mm-hmm.
We can direct them to Leisure Games, or we can tell them there's a Chronicles of Darkness tournament taking place on Saturday.
Yep.
You can play these games. And yeah, they can already download them, they can already play them, but it's just, from a business standpoint, it's another level of marketing.
Right.
From a customer engagement standpoint, it's us saying, we know you love these games, here, we love them too. we are giving you the opportunity officially to play them, sort of under our auspices. And I think people like that. People have really enjoyed going over to the Leisure Game Stall and finding Vampire the Requiem 2nd Edition there. Because there will be some people who didn't know there was a 2nd Edition, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there will be other people who were only aware of it being available online. And it just creates a different feeling when you see it in the wild.
Yeah, I mean, it's
a little treasure hunt thing going on there, too. Yeah. What does Leisure Games have?
Yeah.
But also, I mean, it's something that way back when Rich and I first started working together, when I was the alternative publishing developer, it's something we still kind of struggle against, is that this mild perception that PDFs aren't quote-unquote real. On some level, right? That online sales, it's digital, I can still get it, but it's not entirely authentic, I suppose. And you're pointing out, Matthew, I think it's very valid, is that, you know, oh, I went to the Onyx Path booth, they pointed me to a place where I could buy the game, and then I got it, and I played with people who made the game. There's a level of authenticity or validity that comes with that that you just can't really replicate. It's not something we can do all the time, but when we can offer that, I think people really do value and treasure it.
Yeah.
And it's an experience, too. It's a con experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all of the things you want to do to have fun are all happening right here because you chose to come to this thing,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool. The other thing that happened yesterday was a woman came up, and she's a Scion backer. She'd gotten her books, loved what she got from the Kickstarter, and then basically hugged me because of how nasty some of the comments were.
Really?
On the Kickstarter, and she wanted me to know that not everyone felt that way, and that she really loved everything that we had done.
That's
and
really
she
cool.
really loved how the Scion Kickstarter went.
Yeah.
And that was really, like, a very nice moment. It's one of those things where, like, all right, now I will face down 10 bad comments because of this nice person.
No, similarly, like, two of my players, before I even ran the Stubby Rising
game. So I heard you guys got bought by Modiphius.
Apparently,
I heard
Dave
Brookshaw
on the podcast now. Dave Brookshaw is... interjected random rumors in the podcast. Hey, Dave, how you doing? we have not been bought out by Modiphius.
Alert. Scrub that last minute.
Even before my Utopia Rising game, two of the players came up to introduce themselves. They happened to be in your Utopia Rising game later on today, and they brought tea for everybody.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's genuinely cool. That's, you know, you didn't have to do that. You know, one thing... I can almost understand after we ran the game. It's like, hey, thank you so much for running it. Your game might suck, but we still think, you know, we'd appreciate you coming out.
Well, again. Aren't British people lovely?
They are. They just really
and
are.
Irish people.
Yes, absolutely. They're all very, very wonderful.
Yeah. No, I think it's been a lovely experience so far. Looking forward to see what happens on day two and subsequently day three. But yeah, I think as long as it carries on as it has been going, then we'll be walking away with a very happy convention.
Absolutely. I look forward to see what happens today.
Yeah, that's a good way to end this part, Eddie.
Good thing you didn't talk over it.
Yeah, let's...
Stretch this out, really.
Let's really bring up the enthusiasm of this final piece by adding a dun-dun or a bong. Or a slide whistle.
I was about to say, I have a slide whistle I have to find now.
All right.
Welcome to day three of UK Games Expo. I am joined here with my ever-loving co-host, Matthew Dawkins.
Hello.
And also we have Rich and Clara.
Hello.
Skibbity-bop, wah!
Skibbity-bop.
Yes, we've been beatboxing and singing and
scatting.
All sorts of scatting and all sorts of things to keep us... up and awake for this final day.
Yeah,
that's it. Energy remains.
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of the secrets of Onyx Path. We don't drink coffee, we don't take drugs. If we want to zhuzh ourselves up before a convention, we get into some freestyle Scatman, yeah!
Anything we do but, I mean, don't let our exhaustion fool you. It's been a great show so far. It's just been so much going on that we're a little tapped out energy-wise.
Day three, we are out of food and drink. So I have not seen a living human being.
Yes. Forced to eat our friends at Cubicle 7.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, that was mostly McElroy.
That was true. So yesterday, let's see, we had the Chronicles of Darkness tournament.
Yeah.
How'd that go, guys?
It went very well. Clara ran Vampire the Requiem. Can you tell us a little about how that game went?
Well, it actually went more or less off the plan. It was a full vampire dungeon crawl in the basement of a cathedral. And the deeper they went in, the more weird things started happening. And they met their main antagonist down there. and actually managed to save him and not murder him. Very unvalidating way to do that, but inspiring nonetheless. A full baptism went on.
Wow.
And so I ran the Contagion Chronicle session in the evening for one player from Vampire, one from Werewolf, one from Changeling, one from Promethean, one from Geist. And they all got through to an Antarctic scenario. I used some of Jose Garcia's material that he wrote for the Antarctica chapter of the Contagion Chronicle. And it was very much tailored to fit the characters that made it through. It was an interesting prep process because we had about an hour, hour and a half between the afternoon session and my session. So I had to get all the storytellers together, find out exactly what happened in their games, find out which characters went through, and therefore had to determine what might happen in the evening session to actually make it appealing for them. So it was a nice, what would it be, a last minute game preparation session. But I think it
improvisation.
There was lots of yes and. It was very player led. The players were all fantastic. I'm sure we will have a photo of them up on the blog. The winner of that session, voted by the other players, three votes, as opposed to second place, who got two votes, was the changing player, Michael, who was playing a changeling by the name of Ash from Hearts on Trial, the jumpstart Changeling the Lost.
Oh, nice.
And Michael won the last in circulation prestige edition of Demon the Descent, so we're told.
Last one in captivity.
So now it's free in the wild. But yeah, it was a wonderful game, all very much inspired by The Thing. Obviously, there was a bit of God Machine in there, a little bit of Resident Evil as well.
Mummy teasing.
Yes, there was mummy teasing. We had some mummy second edition content. We even had a deviant. We had a vat bred clone who had been infected with the contagion and decided, I'm going to start messing with my immaculate body by inserting shunts and augments into my limbs so I can better spread this contagion.
Wow.
So going around with syringes and all kinds of lovely lovely tools to administer hot doses.
And syringes for fingers?
Well, I thought that was a bit scarecrow-like. I was imagining them actually in the forearm. And she was grabbing the heads of humans and basically inserting the parasite into their foreheads. So that was nice. And Clara was very kindly, for moral support, stuck around into the evening session.
The rest of us bailed.
Like the rest of us.
Despite having ran two games already that day and was providing sound effects and played... well, there was a moment where the mummy had to crack his rib cage open and there was only one of us here who knows what that sounds like.
That's fair.
And that is close.
Just for context, I'm an intensive care nurse, so I actually know what that kind of thing sounds like. Body horror is my thing.
So what, what does it sound like? Repeat it for us. Wow, that is creepy.
That is like opening a door. Like, your bones actually sound like that.
That's good. Yeah. We've got your hinges in there, right?
Yeah.
I do not have hinges in my chest, Rich.
Once in a while.
You know. Yeah.
So
you have to oil your ribs occasionally.
My roommate, you've seen it.
So yeah, the game went very well. The players seemed happy, and all in all, I think it was a very good way of exposing the Chronicles of Darkness to a larger group of people. We had some very happy players.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of people had fun. I heard that a number of people were playing those games who never heard of Chronicles of Darkness before.
Yep.
So you're right. It's exposing people to the world as a whole. Getting people used to the idea of the Contagion Chronicle and how these games can mix together. It sounds like it's been a great success.
Yeah, well, the Werewolf player who was voted through to the final had never played Chronicles of Darkness before. And so she was elated to play a werewolf with all of the gifts that she had available in Werewolf. As soon as she started finding in the Contagion Chronicle that she could start borrowing the changeling's powers as well, they formed a bond across the table. There was a wonderful scene where our Tammuz Promethean had it up to here with the slasher that was introduced in the Geist the Sin Eaters game and was transported to Antarctica with them, and so he just launched his favorite shovel. He did love this shovel. He was transported from the Dark Eras, Act 2 era of the Great War, in fact. He was going around with his trench shovel.
Oh,
he just launched it through the air at the slasher to cut him off mid-speech. because he was a genius slash. The changeling blessed it, essentially, so it became an enchanted shovel in midair. The werewolf helped out with that because the werewolf was borrowing the changeling's powers, and the slasher was killed in one fell blow with a shovel to the throat.
It was fascinating to see the teamwork.
Yeah.
You know, despite them coming from all different kinds of slabs, they didn't even know each other. They just appear in this hut in the middle of nowhere.
Deep in the snow.
Exactly. Mm. And they actually managed to form a functioning team. So I think that's really the essence of the Taken Chronicles. So you're fighting against this main antagonist, which is the Contagion.
Yeah.
And they really did that brilliantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it sounded like all of the, and also the events leading up to this final game, the various individual game line games, listening to everybody talk about it, our GMs afterwards were so energized and excited and just thrilled by how phenomenal the role play was all the way through. That was to me really, really satisfying to hear, because a lot of times, you know, you don't know what you're going to get at a convention when you sit down to GM. Here we have people who like have written on these projects, developed these projects, and oh my god!
Oh, there's a tournament announcement. Oh,
wow. So, no, no, sure, repeat it.
Well, listeners.
Ran already won.
Yeah. Well done, Richard. Not everyone's watched it. Well,
massive spoilers, losers. It's over 2 weeks.
This is why they called it Game of Thrones for the TV show. Over a tannoy doesn't work.
But anyway, if you're listening to this podcast and you're in the Game of the Song of Ice Fire tournament, you have to go see.
You've missed it.
Immediately.
Travel back inside.
We did not have a giant godlike voice announcing our tournament.
No, well, we're not George R. R. Martin.
It's true. We are
not even all together.
No. No. When our powers combine, we become George R.
Yeah. We just gotta get that R. Yeah.
We're just George Martin with the Beatles.
But yeah, so you're saying that all the sorcerers are very energized afterwards, yeah. And that was very heartening to kind of see and hear about.
And then when the players were walking out, they were rattling on about what you did, what did I do, this, so that's always a great sign.
Yeah, if people want to talk about the game after it's finished, it means, well, it's staying in their minds. They might, for our benefit as a company, they might go out and buy it. At the very least, they'll tell their friends about it, and that's all we could really hope for from a convention.
Yeah,
absolutely. And, I mean, but one of the things that was interesting to me, kind of right before the show, we were having a lunch right before the tournament started, and we got to a bit of a conversation about how in convention games, the goal is not to showcase the entire game,
yeah,
but rather to showcase what the game feels like, what the game's cores, yeah. And so it's interesting we have these. I mean, we call it a tournament, but really, I mean, it's just more kind of a distilling storyteller experience. Because like we're trying to cram a lot. We crammed 5 different Chronicles Darkness games and the crossover game into this 6-hour block, 8-hour block.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff we just couldn't get to. We can't necessarily get to. But I've never heard of anyone playing a game at a convention, buying the book, going home, oh, they didn't use this rule, so this game is terrible, you know?
Yeah, and it's, well, for instance, when I run They Came From Beneath the Sea at conventions, which is still on Backerkit, the main rules I like to focus on are the cinematics and the quips. They are definitely the, I guess, flagpoles of They Came From Beneath the Sea. And while I love the stunts and the tropes that exist in that game, they are very much secondary, and the kinds of things I expect players and narrators or directors will dive into when they have the book, when they have cards to go with it, when they have a live gaming group they can hand cards out to.
Yep.
For instance, stunts, and I think this is the same across all story path games, are something that is really beneficial to own the book to access or to have cards with those stunts on.
But, yep.
Unless you want to make a list of your favoured stunts so you can just go back to them. But in a one-shot at a convention, that's less feasible.
Yeah, I found that for Dystopia Rising, I was doing a lot of helping people. Like, okay, here are my stuff left, so with their successes, maybe you could do this or that, kind of giving them stock props. Yeah, I want to do that one.
Yeah.
So that way, acting as their kind of reference guide to give them a couple of options of what they want to do with their successes.
Yeah.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah, and then in the Monica Smal game I ran yesterday, I had a player there who was very familiar with the Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition rules specifically. And there's a couple times where he had some questions about how Mal differs from Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. But again, he pretty quick got on and was like, you know, it's a convention game. I'm not super worried about it. I was just more curious. And so it's like, I think even players kind of recognize that we don't play these games directly as written. And I ran the first adventure of the Pirates of Pugmire Chronicle, which is still on Kickstarter, and we're at $28,000 at the time of recording. I did take some liberties with it because it's like I had to bring them cat characters over, and because it was a game of all, a character of all cats, they had different relationships with the bird character, a couple other things. So I played a little fast and loose with the adventure structure because I was trying to hit the feel of, like, you know, you're in Waterdark Port, and this is what it's like to work with in a pirate city, and this is what it's like to try to start to get a lens into that pirate society before they go off into the seas, and what it's like to have to sail the sea to cross nations. I wasn't really worried about hitting the exact beats that's going to come out in the adventure.
Yeah.
And the players had a really good time. They fought an alligator. The alligator nearly won. It was great.
Excellent. Yeah. A little drama there is important.
Absolutely. Well, because they're floating out on a log, and that's when the alligator attacks. So they're trying to, like, you know, well, I'm going to get my bow. It's like, but you're on a log. You can't really get the distance. And so they were jumping back onto
the shore. I saw Lord of the Rings, and I could jump onto the log and onto the shield and skim across the water and shoot the
arrow. That's what happened. It's like, well, I'm a cat. It's jumped really hard. They say, all right, you know what? I'll give it to you, disadvantage. They roll a natural 20 on both dice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I guess you can. I guess you're just that cool.
Yep, mega.
I mean, we're talking about what we include in games when you're running it, but Colin specifically, what I've learned, this is the first time I've done this, but what I've learned the last 3 days is it's not the mechanics that leaves an impression on people.
Right.
It's the theme. It's
yep.
the feeling. It's
right.
the emotion that evokes in their character.
Yep.
So that's what's important when you run a game. It doesn't really matter. I've run B5 for example. All the blood dice, it's okay,
yeah.
but it's not what's important.
Right.
What's important is they get an emotional, good feeling.
Yep.
Yeah.
And something else I've learned only in the past year that I've been using in my games more is acting a little bit like, my friend Sean Fannin does this a lot, is that when I roll a die behind my screen where I fail, I as the game master will, like, you know, slap my hand and go, oh my God, I can't believe you're beating up on my NPC. And for a long time I was like, why do you do that? You know, and he explained to me, he's like, it's part of the acting. The player feels like, by the game master emoting like that, that they're getting a thrill out of, like, you know, yes, we got something over here. Or, like, you know, if they roll really well, it's like, oh, I can't believe you did a critical success on my NPC, whatever. So by playing the antagonist, quote unquote, but it's actually just giving some feedback to the players that, hey, you're doing a really cool thing.
Yeah, I still try to keep that narrative, like when I would do, you know, DMing way back in the day.
When dinosaurs rolled the earth and...
Yes, when I was playing against the Neanderthal, and we were rolling bone dice.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah. But sort of like the same sort of thing you go where, like, you know what's going on, so now I want to relay this to them. So, roll, you know, big dramatic moment behind the screen, the dice, get to hear the dice roll.
Yep.
And you see the look in his eyes as you drive the stake right through. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. You can't believe this was it. This is the end for the great blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Lord Farquhar, whatever.
Right.
Sorry, no copyright infringement intended.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing. It's like, I try to, whenever possible, when the enemy is resolved. If the players don't have a strong ending, I try to work something in. Like when the Fred Crocodile went to attack, he did a critical failure, and then a triggered effect went off that ended up killing him. And so the crocodile latched onto the log and then died stuck on the log, so they had this log with an alligator.
That's
stuck
a rudder now.
Right, yeah.
It's a, like, double life log.
Yeah, we just need to use his tail.
This is sinking a bit, we should probably get off now.
As usual, for the listeners to this podcast, we're making motions with our hands.
Yes.
Because this is
the gripping motions I make with the rocket claws.
Very strong visual medium.
Just picture somebody gripping like an alligator, crocodile, and mouth, with their hand.
And if we'd gotten the camera, we would just stand stone still and not gesture at all.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, it's not just over here vaguely, it's at the microphone, so you can visualize it better.
See, yeah, I was imagining Jaws, you know, when it has the gas canister, when the shark has the gas canister, yeah. Shortly after it's eaten Robert Shaw.
always a sad scene for me.
Yeah.
Seems so unnecessary if you just held out a little bit longer.
I don't know, I think Quint needed to die in Jaws. I don't think he was ever planning on coming back to shore. That's why he was ripping the radio out and all that.
I mean, that was his arc.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have seen him go out a little bit. Like, if he'd been smaller, then cut his way out before he died.
Oh yeah, I gotcha.
From hell's heart, I spit it.
Yes. Moby Dick, but
I don't live in this.
This is my house now.
As he submerges,
you'll never get to me again. And yes, this is exactly what it's like hanging out with us at this show.
Call me Ishmael.
at Leisure Games, we are sold out of just about everything except for Pugmire and Mal.
Well, they ran down to London and got more monarchies, at least.
Yep.
But they had it in stock in their store to bring up here because Pugmire and Mal are selling so fast at the Leisure Games booth. And people just kept asking us about Scion, which they actually can't sell until Wednesday. So hopefully people will be visiting their store.
Yeah.
And getting it that way. Because they've been really great partners for us at this convention. So look to keep that going.
And if you are UK-based, any of you listeners, Leisure Games is actually found in North London in Finchley. You can get there very easily on the underground. On the Northern Line.
There you go.
I have no idea. I'm not a driver. I go everywhere by train or by chauffeur.
Well, you have to. Put your coffin into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I only travel by old steam trains for mood, so that whenever I arrive at stations, there's a cloud of smoke and steam with me walking through it in a top hat.
As the orchestra swells.
Yes.
Anna Kane,
I have arrived in Finchley Leisure Games. Where is my Mao?
I desire cat games.
We've sold out. You fade backwards into the steam.
Yeah, it sucks back into the tray. Yes, I will return next Wednesday. Okay. Yes, I shall order online.
My steam I can't
power even anymore. Yes. Oh my god.
You will rue this day, Leisure Game.
Keyboard about 3 feet long. Get to hit down on the keys.
Drive-through RPG it is.
Now I just imagine claiming praxis over Leisure Games.
I'm the prince of every day, and you acquire the cat game.
Yes. You have failed me for the last time.
All the ghosty style pulls the cape over his face. Oh my god.
Nothing but a failure, Starscream.
Here's our hint.
Yes.
We're going to talk about Transformers the movie on Thursday, too.
Alright, so Eddie, you're the Transformers expert at the table. Was there a Transformer that could turn into a steam train?
Yes, there was. Astro Train. He could turn into a steam train and he could turn into a space shuttle because those are two very compatible technologies.
Okay.
So we got into space was with steam.
Right.
We got up. Coming down was a problem.
With a rocket at the top.
Yeah,
that's the Eureka moment. Oh well, now I know.
Yeah, no, Astro Train was kind of unfortunate in a lot of ways.
Sounds like a Final Fantasy summon. The Astro Train.
You could slam a train in Final Fantasy VI.
There you go. That was the Doom train in 7 or 8. Anyway, we are going very much off.
Was there ever a Thomas the Tank Engine Transformer? Like,
no.
Because Thomas was a train, he was not a robot pretending to be a train.
He's
deep undercover.
He's a robot in disguise, Brad.
So, if we accept that Thomas the Tank Engine, Gordon, Henry, James, and the rest,
Percy,
we could go on, Annie and Clarabelle, were all Transformers at Deep Undercover. The big failure...
Based on the island of Soda.
Yes, because that's where all the bad shit happens. their biggest problem through their disguise was having big human faces on their trains. I think that makes them stand out somewhat.
And yet it worked to fool you, didn't it?
Well, it fooled me as a child. If all they're trying to do is fool children, I think Mr. Top and Hat, the Fat Controller, is onto this little ruse.
He's found a way to use their Transformer abilities for his own benefit.
Yeah, well, clearly Diesel is the Decepticon in this. Yeah.
So yeah, today's going to be more of this, I think, really, is our plan for today.
Can we get the license for the Thomas the Tank Engine RPG?
Transformers.
I'm sure Hasbro will give that right away.
They basically will get the license for Thomas to make them Transformers, but not call them Transformers.
GoBots. No one's using that name anymore.
No, Hasbro owns that too.
You know, something like that. And there you go.
Transformers.
Yep.
Transformers.
They're laughing despite the fact you said it first, Rich, and I appreciate that.
I'm always about supporting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take your ideas and make them good.
Right.
Try. Just try. I defy you. I'm thinking about this now. I'm thinking about the voice acting.
Of each Transformer.
Yeah, well, who I can't remember his name, but I love his voice acting. Who does Optimus Prime?
Oh, Peter Cullen.
Yeah. Peter Cullen as Thomas.
No, Thomas is too young. He needs Andrew Holland or someone like that, I think. He needs that plucky Spider-Man.
At the older train.
Gordon.
The worst part is I have to show notes for this.
Yeah, definitely.
This show is just going to be, and then we talk about Transformers for 5 days.
Well, mm-hmm. Thomas.
Transformers
for us. On your tracks. So that's the whole thing. When they want to go really mobile, they have to turn into human form.
Because humans can move faster. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, humans can run faster than steam trains.
Something that doesn't have train tracks on it.
Well, that's like their ban. Like if this was a Chronicles of Darkness game, and they were some kind of god machine angel, these tank engines. Their ban is that they can't actually escape their rails. The God Machine's purpose is for the trains to stick to the rails
which
and serve the Fat Controller.
Which is what the Top of Hat is responsible for. Yeah. He is an angel of the God Machine.
So to summarize, we have now combined Transformers, Thomas the Tank Engine, and the God Machine.
Yep, Demon the Descent.
Demon the Descent.
Why didn't Birmingham talk about Thomas the Tank Engine?
That is not a rule! That was never a rule!
I think this podcast has derailed.
Oh! And you'll never be asked back.
I'm going to delete the interview with
you.
Those
bad puns are mine.
All right. So today our plans are very minimal, as you can tell. We clearly don't have the brain power to do anything coherent today.
Yeah, well, there's been about 10 customers go past us. and
say,
one.
They're having so much fun, we shouldn't interrupt, should we?
No.
Mayn't we?
Then tonight we're going to get our respective planes or travel plans.
And automobiles, yep.
But is there anything before we wrap up, is there anything, a takeaway that we found from the UK Game Expo? Matthew, anything like...
I've been coming here since the very beginning, since this was held in a small Masonic lodge. And there were about 8 retailers, and the only people in cosplay were a couple of stormtroopers. Before the war, back when it only cost a shiny sixpence to gain entrance. And it's just been wonderful to see how the convention has just exploded. It's exploded year on year. It has been an exploding 10. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's the biggest convention in the UK of its kind, and I have no reason to doubt it's going to keep getting that way. I think it's a convention with something for everyone. And I'm really pleased with how Onyx Path have, well, how we've put ourselves out there at this convention with a booth. I hope we get to do it again.
Like Rich?
I talk a lot about how we're changing, how we're doing our convention attendance. We're experimenting with a few things. I think this has been a particularly excellent use of that here. We've had a lot of fun with just saying, yes, these are some examples of the things we're working on, but if you're interested in buying it, give them your games, and that's worked out really well. Basically, obviously no one can see this, but our booth consists of a long table with all of us. Separate things on it, some takeaway cards that we can just walk away with, and a round table, which we're now have a giant microphone in the middle of it, but it's also a function to have meetings at, it also functions to sit down with demo a few things, and it's been really very low stress, low, you know, we haven't had to step up and say, would you like to buy this thing? Which is a little rough for us when we're mostly a bunch of creators who spend our time, you know, by ourselves typing things or drawing on things or whatever. So I think it's been a good fit for us here. And in this particular time, we have learned things from it that we would do differently, but in general, it's really worked out very well for us. So anybody who was reading the blog last week or the week before that, they were like, huh, I'm really interested in how they decide to do their conventioneering group stuff, and therefore I would like to know how that works out. Yeah, is your answer.
Absolutely. And for me, honestly, I feel like while this show has been busy, I don't feel it's been stressful. Shows like Gen Con, I mean, you know, we talk about, we love Gen Con, we love the energy of Gen Con, but it can be very stressful because it's always, I got to do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and I make sure there's something. And you also have to sell things, and you have to make sure the customers are happy and make sure that we're going to our panels. And in this show, I feel like while we've been using energy, it's not been like I have to do the next thing. Oh, I'm excited about the next thing.
Well, listen to your list. It's like, you know, we want to talk to customers, we want to get people excited about our games, we want to play some games, some demos, and we want to talk to, have, you know, business meetings and stuff like that, and we want to sell things. Which of those is the man out of that whole thing?
Right.
Which is why we decided to see if we could do this with having our sales partners at the con and let them do the selling, which is what they do really, really well.
Yep.
And let us do what we think we're maybe a little bit better at, which is engaging people and having a lot, you know, having, sort of showing the fun and the depth of the creations we have.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Clara has just returned from being diligent and helping an interested wanderer.
The party's over.
Yeah. What are your takeaways from your very first UK Games Expo and very first convention where you are attending as part of Onyx Park?
It's been a lot of fun. Overwhelming, to say the least. There's a lot of people here compared to conventions in Denmark, that's for sure. But I've got a bigger understanding of the industry in a whole. I've seen a lot of different groups, a lot of different companies, and talked to a lot of interesting people. And the best thing of all is that I actually had a chance to run our games for our fans and people who don't even know our games. And they've come away with a good experience. And that is more than I hope for.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to kind of wrap things up. So thank you all for spending some time to chat with us on the Pathcast, and we'll go on to the outro.
We return to Dixie and Matthew Hour.
Dixie and Matthew in the morning.
See, when I did it, I imagined it was more like a nuclear warning. That's why I did the solemn voice. Dixie and Matthew Hour on BBC Four.
I think even our angry or serious political shows sometimes have catchy jingles over here. It's just a thing. We like catchy jingles here in the US.
Well, you know, I guess that's why you're such a relentlessly optimistic nation.
Did you just get political again?
So, what did you think of that footage from Expo, Dixie? Make it up.
It was action-packed. There were so many freelancers dropping by. It was like a special guest every minute, like a clip show on a television. It was just wonderful. It was like the 100th episode of any TV show that celebrates their 100th episode and has all the past special guests show up. Rich said things. Eddie talked. Matthew talked. I'm sure John showed up at some point and said, it has Burke, or it's got Burke, or whatever his catchphrase is.
Something Scottish, yes. The...
Steffi was there. Everything was great.
Exactly. And in honesty, we all had a great time at Expo. And when I say we all, I, of course, don't mean Dixie. All of those... I'm sorry, Dixie.
Those y'all need to send me to a con by myself now. They're going to take tons of great pictures.
Will that have the same effect, do you think?
Yeah, because I'm either without any of y'all. I'm just going to be there. I'm going to tag y'all in all my photos, talk about how great of a time I'm having.
Okay, all right. I'm sure Matt can arrange that. One of the things at Expo that was particularly surprising to me, and I think we mentioned it in the footage, but I'll double down, emphasize it again, is the number of people at the UK Games Expo that were interested in Prince's Gambit. They loved it. They loved the idea of it. And the reason I say that is because although I think it is a remarkable, fantastic game, and every time I've organized its play, I've had a lot of fun, I found at American conventions, it takes a lot more to get people's attention or grab their interest to play this 6 to 8 player party game.
Right, yeah.
Whereas at the UK Games Expo, we were getting to the point where our demo booth, we weren't selling anything from the demo booth. We were selling via Leisure Games. So we had a bunch of product there, but it was specifically for demo only. We were sending copies of Prince's Gambit, little decks, over to Leisure Games to sell because there was that much interest in it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was very good fun. It was lovely to see, to be honest, because also I've had a lot of fun with Prince's Gambit, and it's a game I definitely recommend. If you are listening to this and are interested in what this Vampire the Masquerade card game is, do check it out on DriveThruRPG. You can order it from there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought in all, the entire experience was great fun. I've been going to Expo since Expo number one. And it's just an amazing experience to see how it has grown from its humble beginnings. And I have no doubt it will just continue to grow.
I always love that when you can go to a con for long enough to kind of see it evolve and grow and change. Mm. This coming year will be my 20th year at Dragon Con.
Wow.
Which, you know, when I first started going, yeah, there were a couple of host hotels and then there was like part of an expo hall. So it was pretty big even then, but seeing it now, like it takes over downtown Atlanta. It's you know, it's an 8 or 9 separate buildings at this point. Like you cannot go anywhere in downtown without seeing somebody from Dragon Con wandering around. And then same thing with Geek Girl Con in Seattle, which I'd love to go back to someday. Because I was there for the first one. I was part of the committee that kind of helped start it, although I didn't continue with them for various reasons. But it was still a really cool convention. And, like, I've heard it's just gotten bigger and bigger and better, and people look forward to it every year now. So, yeah. It is cool that you have that with UK Games Expo, because that's a cool feeling.
Well, it was the very first convention I attended.
Oh, yeah?
And so, yeah, it does hold a special place in my heart. I think the first time I went, I only participated in one game. Otherwise, I just wandered around the 8 or so retailers that were there, and just, I guess, absorb the atmosphere, going back to the ambience again. And yeah, it's done nothing but impress. It's still the same organizers. It's still in the same city. It's just in a very much larger venue. It was interesting to see, in fact, there was a Collector Mania Comic Con running in another part of the NEC, which was the building in Birmingham where the convention takes place. The convention center, the NEC, is larger than the convention center in Indianapolis for Gen Con, but it doesn't fill the entire thing. It's just several hangars back to back. And so Collectomania was going on essentially across the hall. And by Sunday, the last day of the convention, at Collectomania, they had big signs up saying, if you have a ticket for UK Games Expo, you can attend our convention for free. And and that was interesting, because there's obviously a part of that that's just, hey, we can see there's a lot of people over there, let's get them in over here. But they had the UK Games Expo logos and so on, so I assume it was something that had been coordinated officially. And I always like that. I like seeing when fan events work together to I guess, both support what the fans might want. So you would see gamers going over to the film and comic convention, and someone came over to us, in fact, and said, what was it? They said something about John Ratzenberger. I'm sure Eddie will be able to tell us on our next episode. There was something relating to John Ratzenberger, who is an actor from Cheers, listeners, if you're unfamiliar.
And Toy Story.
Yeah, and Toy Story, of course. He plays the... does he play the T-Rex? This is cliffhanger all over again.
No, he plays the pig, Ham.
Oh, Ham, okay.
I never saw Cheers, sorry. I just know he played Ham.
Yeah. Cheers was a bit before my time. I got on board around Frasier era, and occasionally saw Cheers on reruns. There we go. That's one of our favourite things to tangent on. Just random things from the television or cinema. So, Dixie, is there anything you want to add to this outro before we sign off on this podcast?
I don't think so. It was interesting having most of everybody be out of the office for the better part of a week. That's new for me, and just in that I got a lot fewer emails. And also, if I had a question, I couldn't do my go-to, which is I should ping Eddie.
Yeah.
So that's always fun. But I got a lot of work done, which was really cool. I got a lot of work done this past weekend. I am, for those of you who don't know, I am on the writing team for Scion Demigod. So anybody keeping track at home, this is my third ever writing assignment. And it's been a lot of fun. A lot of fun to work on. Yeah, and then I had to write the blog on Monday, and that was really weird. It was like a weird sort of pressure, just because I've been reading that blog for so many years.
And you wrote it so well.
Well, you helped. You sent me all kinds of pictures. You sent me a whole convention report. It was great, because I would not have been able to fill that much space without all that. I was like, what do I write about? But no, that was a fun new experience. I'd be happy to take over again in the event that Rich can't do it for some reason. Because as we know, occasionally Rich is out or goes on vacation or whatnot, and someone has to update the blog. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was
okay. Cool. All right, then. Well, in that case, it's time to sign off. So, Dixie, if you want to find you on social media, where would they look?
You can find me most everywhere at Dixie Cyanide, or my editing website is dixiecochran.com.
Where would they find Eddie?
At Eddie Fates on most social medias, Realms of Pugmire, Eddie Fates. .com? Eddieweb.com? What's his website? Eddiefate.com.
Something to do with Pugsteady as well.
Yeah, it's also Pugsteady on Twitter. Eddie has too many things, but
there's a lot of pugs in his life.
Edy Fate.
And I'm on MatthewDawkins.com, and you can find pretty much everything I do through links accessible on that website. But again, as I've said a lot recently, please do subscribe to the Onyx Path YouTube channel. There's been a bit of a lull in content over the last couple of weeks, what with conventions and some book deadlines, but that will be picking back up again in the coming weeks. We'll be doing some Scion explorations, what with the rather exciting release. And we'll be doing some other videos as well. We may even do even more actual plays, because the recent Scion and Pirates of Pugmire actual plays appear to have gone down very well.
Oh, speaking of which, Scion did just come out. Yay! If anybody wants to pick up Hero Origin, they can do that. Also, game stores should be able to order them. Also, Pirates of Pugmire Kickstarter is still going on, and as of time of recording, we have not yet hit our goal. So we'd love it if you could, you know, pitch in for a copy so that we can have some awesome birds and pirates and lizards and dogs and cats sailing the acid sea together in stores.
See, that's how I was explaining it to people at the UK Games Expo. And as soon as I said they're selling on the Acid Sea, people said, oh, this is a game like Yellow Submarine. It's a bit drug trippy. That's perfect. That is exactly how I will run Pirates of Pugmire. It's Yellow Submarine. You could have a traveling band on a pirate ship.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be cool.
Works for me.
I did make a musician type class. There's a rhymer.
You did, and I think I put one in my adventure in that book.
Yeah.
But one thing also, and to add to that, the request for people to back Pirates of Pugmire if they haven't. We know not everyone is in a financial position where they can, so at the very least, please voice it. Spread the word. Pirates of Pugmire, it was, and I've said this every week for the last several weeks, it was such fun to write, and it's been such fun to read, and one adventure from it was even being run at UK Games Expo by Eddie, and that went so well. So please do give it a look, and even if you can't afford to back, please share a link to it, because it will help us immeasurably.
Yeah.
With that said, many worlds, one pathcast.